This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Welcome to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. I don't know what Rich has been.
What stash did you find today in the corner?
I am so excited.
You don't understand.
I am so excited.
You are so excited, as a matter of fact. Because here's what Rich did before the show. Rich took a he went to Taco Bell. And he grabbed like 36 hot sauces. And just like the little package things. Open them all up. Like poured them into a little cup. And then poured him into his eyes, so he's been like this. Oh, pretty! So, man, pretty exciting here. And I gotta tell you, this is a show that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. And I know Rich, you have, and Mary Goulet, I know you have
every Thursday,
but specifically this Thursday.
This show,
because we got a pretty impressive dude on. As a matter of fact, so much so that let's just double check if he's still there. Because once David, you actually know what show you're on, right? This is not Larry King. You got that memo.
I got the memo.
You got the memo. Okay, just making sure there. So, we got a pretty creative staff there. So every now and again, we just, we try lining people up. And every now and again, we tell them this is Larry King. And then when Larry King actually doesn't get to the mic, they're like, I don't know if I'm on the right show. And then by that time, of course, we've got them hooked. So thanks for joining us here on Reinvention Radio. You've got a really interesting story. And if you don't know David, well, first of all, you certainly know some of his work, or more specifically, some of the work that he's been intimately involved with over the years as the former CEO and executive chairman of Yum Brands. People may not know exactly what Yum is, but if I tell you that Yum is still, even though David's no longer there, but it is still the world's largest restaurant, one of the world's largest restaurant companies, we're talking 43,000 KFC, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell restaurants in more than 130 countries. And more than 1.5 million company and franchise associates. That is unreal.
Big numbers.
I mean, David, just out of curiosity, 1.5 million, does that make Yum the largest employer in the, it can't be in the world, but it's got to be like top 10.
Yeah, we're definitely in the top 10. We're way up there. Yeah.
I like it. He still says we.
He still says we. Uh-huh. So are you, how long were you there?
Well, I was there, I became CEO of the company in 1999, but I was president of the company in 97. We had a phenomenal time building a fantastic business. And it was very exciting because it was a global business. You know, when we started the company, 20% of our profits were outside the United States. When I left, 80% of our profits are outside the United States.
Wow, talk about.
So we became global. I got to see the world. I got to learn a lot about different cultures and people. And I love people, food, and marketing. So I was in the ideal job.
Yeah. And while you were on those travels, I trust that you probably flew coach, correct?
Well, I have flown coach some, but not a whole lot, to be honest with you.
And more specifically, Southwest. They were like, "Here, do you want the peanuts or the pretzels?" You're like, "Do you know
who
I am? Look at me. I'm in aisle 13, like in seat 4. I'm David."
Well, let me tell you, if there's one airline I want to fly in the United States, it is definitely Southwest, because you feel their culture and their passion for people. And that's something that I'm a big believer in as well.
Yeah, and so talk about that just a wee little bit. But first, let's take 12 or 15 or 18 steps back for a second here, because there are a lot of folks who, frankly, would love and aspire to have that sort of executive job, aspire to be in a C-suite position, aspire to really move their way up through the ranks. Did you start? Is this sort of like a rags to riches thing, man, where you started out, you were a busboy at a Pizza Hut, and then you became CEO? Is that kind of how it went?
No, not really, but I guess in some ways you might say that. I come from a very humble background. My father was a coast and geodetic surveyor. I lived in 23 states by the time I was in seventh grade.
Wow.
I moved basically three times a year. My mom would check me into schools and say, "Hey, David, we're leaving, so you better make friends." Mm. I was the first kid in my family to get a college education, and I actually got a degree in journalism. Hmm. And so my first job was a copywriter, and I was started out in the advertising business, and kind of worked my way into the PepsiCo system from the advertising side, and and work my way up the ladder. I never really expected to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, but I sure enjoyed it. And I think one of the great joys of my life was that, you know, everything for me was new. It was a first time experience, and it was an exciting to be able to just keep growing. And I never said I want to be CEO of a company, but what I did, I just loved what I did. You know, I loved marketing, loved the people side of the business, and you know, I just did every job as well as I could, and said, hey, the guy above me is a great guy, but I think or woman, I think I can do the same thing they can do, and I just kept progressing, and I was very, very blessed to be able to do the job that I did.
So 23 states. You moved across 23. You didn't realize you were already surveying locations for franchises.
You were scouting as a kid. So
I grew up eating a lot of KFC, pizza, and Taco Bell.
I want to thank you so much. You single-handedly nourished me from basically 12 to 23 years old.
Just dad.
Good. You're what we call a heavy user. That's fantastic.
So kind of take us through this for a second here, because there's a lot of folks who just don't really understand how you go from point A to point B. You were in the advertising world. Did you make a lateral move into Pepsi? You were working on the brand. Where were you sort of in the chain of command when you came over from Pepsi? And then what do you think you did specifically to get to the point where you became the CEO of that company?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the... You know, my background was, as I said, was advertising. And, you know, basically what I did is I stayed in a job as long as I felt like I was growing. So I started out as a advertising copywriter, but I realized I wanted to get in the business side of advertising. I wanted to be account executive. So I sent out 25 letters to the top 25 advertising agencies in the country. And the first one that... called me to interview me was Ketch McLeod and Grove, and they happened to be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I went up there and worked at on the Heinz business and Rockwell business. And then I realized that I wanted to grow even more, and I wanted to really get some great packaged goods experience. And so I got a call from an advertising agency in Dallas, Texas, which was Tracy Locke, which later became a part of BBDO, and they asked me to be the account executive on Tostitos. So I went down there and was the account executive on Tostitos, and I worked my way up on the advertising side on the Frito-Lay account. And Frito-Lay is a part of PepsiCo, and the president of Frito-Lay and I had a very good relationship. He asked me if I would like to run marketing for Pizza Hut, which was a part of the Pizza Hut system. And I always wanted to be on the client side because you had the opportunity to have more accountability and make more of the decisions versus influence, which you do when you're a consultant or on an advertising agency side of the business. Mm-hmm. So I was able to go in at a very high level of PepsiCo as the chief marketing officer for Pizza Hut. And we turned around the business in 4 years and, you know, doubled sales and profits. And then I got the opportunity to run marketing and sales for PepsiCola Company. Then I wanted to be a president of a company, and I didn't have any operating experience, so I basically went to the chairman of PepsiCo and the CEO of PepsiCola Company and begged him to give me the opportunity to run operations for Pepsi, and I did that for 2 years, and then I got the opportunity to be the president of KFC, and then the president of KFC and Pizza Hut, and then PepsiCo made this decision to spin off the restaurants and make the restaurants an independent public company, and I was in the right place at the right time, and became the CEO of Yum Brands. So, you know, it was, I never would have planned it. I actually wrote a book called The Education of the Accidental CEO, but I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, wow. pretty damn impressive. And so you'll have to forgive me here. I tend to ask questions that others won't necessarily ask, but if you're uncomfortable answering some of these, I totally get it. Let's be real here, man. The folks on the ground level, the Pizza Huts, the KFCs, et cetera, they're not making a lot of money. I mean, we're talking about, and there's a fight to even get them to some decent wages. I mean, minimum wage, they're fighting right now to get folks to $15 an hour. It'll happen, but it's just like this long process. And most of the folks who work in that fast food environment, I mean, they're in that environment of making minimum wage or somewhere just slightly over that. at the pinnacle of your career, what were you seeing from a compensation standpoint?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you at the pinnacle of your career, what were you seeing from a compensation standpoint?
What was I seeing from a compensation standpoint?
Yeah.
For myself or
for
other people?
No, for you.
For me.
Oh,
boy. I made a lot of money. I mean, there's no question about it. My basic salary was over $1 million a year, and I got a bonus of probably $5 to $6 million, and I made a lot of money because the stock went up 7-8 times while I was the head of the company, and I had a lot of equity in the company. So, I was very blessed did very well. But one of the things I want to talk about, Steve, because you bring up this question here, and I think it is a good question. I think the fast food industry is the most maligned and most misunderstood industry in our country in terms of compensation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the great thing about our business is that you do start out, and you can start out at low levels of the organization, but you don't work minimum wage for very long if you're good.
Mm-hmm.
You can move up the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a restaurant general manager in our company and other companies, you can make easily $50,000 a year. Now, the median household income in the United States is around $50,000.
Sure.
So we have great, great jobs. And then if you do well as a restaurant manager and you can supervise other restaurant general managers, you can become an area coach and you can make up to $100,000.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do this. Unfortunately, we got to wait. Shaking. You got to make a good commercial here. So here's what we got to do. We're going to take a quick break here on Reinvention Radio. But let's continue this conversation with David Novak, former CEO of Yum Brands. And he's got a pretty interesting initiative that he's launching right now, which we'll, of course, we'll talk about as well right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulcher, Mary Goulet, Rich Wattay, Whiteway walking around here, somewhere called the Poker, hanging out, and we got David Novak with us as well. And David, before we go too much further here, I must say, I think what are probably the two most powerful words in the English language, which are thank and you. So really do thank you for being on here. And I got that directly actually from an article that you wrote. So it's one of the 10 key principles that you have. So hopefully we'll be able to run through some of that as well. Now, I want to make sure that we have an opportunity here just to go back to the compensation issue, because, I mean, your point is well taken. I mean, 50 grand a year for working in an environment where, frankly, a lot of the folks who start out in a minimum wage position don't really have skills. A lot of them may not even have a degree of any sort. And so to have the opportunity to work their way through the ranks and get to even a middle management type position and come into corporate, I mean, it is something that, let's just say that the fast food restaurants seem to do better than a lot of other industries. So certainly kudos on that front. But did you want to continue? Because I know you were starting to talk about before you were so rudely interrupted there.
The other thing about our industry is Reinvention Radio is all about entrepreneurship. And I'd like you to name an industry that has more entrepreneurs in it than the restaurant business.
Sure.
I mean, you know, we talked about, you know, people who work in restaurants, but we have many people who start out in the restaurants ultimately end up becoming franchisees, and they own their own business, and they make a lot more money than a lot of people make in anywhere in the world. So, that's why I think our industry is maligned. I think if you really look at the facts and you look at the opportunities, you know, there are very few businesses that provide people more opportunities to grow. you know, personally and professionally and monetarily than the restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great business. If you run a great restaurant, you have great people, you offer great food, you can make a lot of money as an owner operator. And obviously, if you work in a corporation, you can work do well just like you can in other corporations in the United States and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, David, this is Mary. Quick question, kind of to bridge the gap a little bit. When you started out, you quickly moved up, but you did leaps and bounds, and you were saying you had a good relationship. That's not the normal track for any given person. You must have something very special about you that you... some charisma and intelligence and
genius, lucky, or probably both.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. The one thing I'll say is I know your program focuses on finding what you love and knowing what your vocation is, knowing what you're meant to do. You know, one of the things that I really loved what I did. You know, I really was passionate about what I did. And when you love what you do, you become an avid learner. You want to learn as much as you can about it, and you want to get better at it. And so for me, my work was never a work. It was always a hobby. It was always something that I did. And I was in constant pursuit of getting better at it because I enjoyed it so much. And, you know, I think that desire to get better, being competitive, and also, you know, I do think my background growing up and moving around and having great parents and you have to go to all these schools that I was checked into, you know, I learned how to work with people. I could read situations very well. I learned how to work through the anxieties you go through in life and in certain business situations. And I think it gave me people skills that allowed me to get people that I worked for to want to invest in me and to get people that I had worked for me want to work with me. Because I think I had an ability to lead, you know, and to help the people that I work for get better and help the people that work for me get better. And I think that's what, you know, I really enjoy. I think, you know, I love lifting up the lives of other people. I like helping people achieve their potential. I love growing a business. And I love winning. And those are the things that I had in every job that I had as I moved up the ladder. And as a result of that, I think people saw my potential and kept putting me in bigger jobs probably earlier than I deserved to be in them.
Hey, Dave, this is Richard again. So I don't know if you had a chance to listen to our rant episode right before, but we were talking about sports franchises and Steve's awesome transition into you running franchises. There obviously is a form of leadership in the winning franchises that just completely dwarfs other franchises. And what are some of the things, systems and processes that entrepreneurs could put in place that you've learned from all your years of building such great franchises that they could maybe apply to their business?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you have to have a great brand. You have to have a great product. You have to have something that people really want and like and enjoy. So without the product, you don't have anything. And to be an effective franchise, you also have to have great economics for the owner so that if an owner invests their time and money, there's a great payout in the end. So you really have to have a good economic model that allows that person to succeed by becoming a franchisee. And then I think the great franchisees or franchisors, franchise companies, they put process and discipline around what really matters. They offer up the operating systems, the people processes, the things that you can do that if you execute them well, you will be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So you give people the tools to win. And then it's up to the entrepreneur to put them to work to make the money and to build the business. But there's no franchise business that's successful without really focusing on the process and discipline around what really matters and helping people develop the teams that will win in whatever business environment you have to be in.
Yeah, so that having, just like the great sports franchises, that franchisee, i.e. like the players on the team, they need to buy into the system big time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, great franchises and franchisor, they get their franchisees involved in the business. They listen to them. And, you know, there's a rule in leadership, no involvement, no commitment. So, you know, you really want to get your franchisees involved in your business. They're passionate about the business. They're close to the customers. And so you want to hear what they have to say and understand what they need and get their ideas and input and lead. I always called it, you know, 1 + 1 = 3. You know, the franchisor works with the franchisee. Together, you listen to each other. The franchisor needs to ultimately lead the franchisees, but you want to do it by getting that input. And when you get that input, you get involvement, and that leads to commitment.
So just out of curiosity, when you say you're supporting the franchisee, and how far deep does that go? Does it go to the person taking the order for the customer, or is that left to the franchisee to learn enough from you guys and the culture and the system?
And translate it over, yeah.
Exactly, because yeah. I think that could be the disconnect.
The franchisee is responsible for building the team,
mm-hmm.
and training the team. What we do is we provide the systems and the training tools that allow people to be successful.
So that's the part that the public only sees, though. We only see the person taking our order.
Right, exactly. You're not going to see the process of the tool. You're
so we don't see it from that perspective.
Yeah.
The stock market sees the other side.
Yeah, right. And I don't know exactly what they're doing from the top down there, but I got to tell you, their employees and their managers are scared shitless or something, because like I did a little research, so you can see I got my Taco Bell KFC cup here. I went in there and I took the kids there the other day. Kids love it. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, they love that Taco Bell KFC stuff. I went in there and I tried talking to a couple of the employees. I'm just like, look, I'm going to have the former CEO of Yum on. And first of all, they kind of looked at me like, what's Yum? Right. So I was like, no, that's the parent company that owns your business here. And I was like, if you had a chance to ask the former CEO or even the current CEO of Yum any sort of questions or tell him or make any suggestions or anything, what would you tell him? And the one kid was like, I don't know. And so I was like, can I talk to your manager? So I talked to the manager, asked him the same question. And he was like, I don't know, maybe open more stores.
Really?
Like, so
they had nothing?
So there's a, I don't know, there's a culture there of something going on, but clearly.
Maybe they thought you were an undercover boss or something.
Right, exactly. I had the mustache and the whole nine thing going there. But
I don't know. You know, I think that's one isolated incident. You know,
yeah, for sure.
I think they might be a little bit shy about what this really means.
And they didn't like Steve.
And they didn't like me.
I don't think you can take that and blow that out of proportion.
Right.
You know, I have a friend of mine who was, gosh, for his entire career out of college, worked as some regional or something pretty high up, would go to all of the stores for KFC and Taco Bell.
Mm-hmm. Regional manager or
something like that.
Yeah.
And he loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, David, I mean,
it's a great business. People love the business. It's like what I'm saying. You know, you guys talk about minimum wage, and, you're playing the tapes that everybody, you know, that I think the media will play about our industry, but you get down to the facts about what we really do and the jobs that we provide in our country,
mm-hmm.
and the opportunities that we provide. You know, I think that you have to really look at it in the total perspective here. And when mm-hmm. you look at it in the total perspective, it's one heck of an industry. I make no apologies whatsoever for what we do and the role we play here in the United States and around the world.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't.
Yeah, and you shouldn't. I mean, you're providing jobs for people, and reality is that some of the jobs that you guys are providing are jobs that they wouldn't be able to get anywhere else, and you give them an opportunity, and there's a lot to be said for that. And so, speaking of opportunity and speaking of recognition, you are now going through what I lovingly call the golden shift, which is you're basically moving from prominence, if you will, to relevance. And I think that that's really what this whole movement around Oh Great One, the OGO movement, is all about. And it's really interesting in terms of what you're doing there. And I love the term, the global recognition deficit, which is something that obviously you've coined, and it plays hand in hand with with what you're doing there with OGO. So pretty interesting stuff there. And it's interesting, the statistics are pretty compelling. 90% of middle management in most companies feel unrecognized by their supervisors. 70% of Americans overall wish they were recognized, you know, more so.
I feel that I'm dissed.
88% of folks feel like they're unrecognized by their coworkers. So I just want to say Mary and Rich and Wade and Kelly, I love you guys and I appreciate you guys. And we're going to talk to David Novak specifically about OGO here on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the Series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. Talking to David Novak, former CEO of Yum Brands. And got a pretty interesting initiative that you've now put. I mean, it's pretty damn impressive, really. Because when you come right down to it, so much of what we think we are doing as employers, as employees, as friends, as family members, etc., we often don't do the simplest things, which is just simply recognize those who are in our lives, those we work with. And frankly, we spend more time with those we work with. I mean, most of us spend more time with those who we work with than even our own family. And so it's really interesting how this whole concept and this whole discussion around recognition has become something that you've really taken on as a primary initiative now moving forward. And I think it's been made pretty clear here in the first couple of segments that one of the reasons why you have been so good in your career in terms of being able to grow, you know, so quickly through the ranks. And, well, I mean, let's just call it what it is there. I mean, the stockholders have got to love you for the, you know, for what you were able to do there. And everything has just been on the up and up. And I think a lot of that's because of what you've been able to do on the recognition front. So is that really what spearheaded kind of this initiative? And what was the thinking behind creating OGO?
Well, I created this company called OGO, which stands for Oh Great One, because what I learned as I traveled around the world, and, you know, we have 1.5 million people around the world, is that no matter where I went, people crave recognition. People feel like, you know, they work hard, they want recognition, and recognition really motivates them. So what I did is I had a lot of fun recognizing people, made that a huge value in our company. When I was president of KFC, I gave away a rubber chicken and $100 because you couldn't eat a rubber chicken. When I was president of Pizza Hut, I gave away a cheese head like the Green Bay Packers have. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would personalize every one of them, number them, write on them what that person did. And I had a lot of fun with it, and I saw people just absolutely loved it. And then our whole company, all of our leaders have individual recognition awards. And so when I decided that it was time for me to retire, what I realized is that there's this global recognition deficit out there. There's people want to be recognized, and they're not being recognized. So I wanted to create a company and a brand that was the first brand to recognize the amazing people in your life. And so I wrote a book called Oh Great One. It's a little story about the awesome power of recognition, and it was to begin to build awareness of this brand. And this book is, you know, really doing quite well, and it's a parable, and it's based on the experiences that I had running Yum Brands and being president of KFC and Pizza Hut, and it really lays out some great ways that leaders can take advantage of the power, what I call it, the secret weapon of recognition, to basically, you know, create a culture of appreciation in your company, and also, you know, could create a culture of appreciation with your family and friends. You know, people are starved for recognition. It's amazing, and it's really not that hard to do. But I really try to drive it home in the book, Oh Great One, and then I'm creating a company that's going to have products that will be products that are personalized in nature that allow you to say to the people that are in your company or in your family that you love and appreciate, that have had a major impact on your life, that, that you really care about them in a personal way. So it's, I'm very excited about it because I've learned from my marketing experience when there's a high degree of unsatisfied need, you have the opportunity to fill it with the right kind of products. And I think there's a high degree of unsatisfied need for recognition. I call that the global recognition deficit. And, you know, we're really going to try to build awareness of that and try to create a movement around, you know, recognizing people and giving people the value and appreciation they deserve.
So I'm looking on your website, whosyourogo.com, and you have these e-cards, which is really cool because when I was thinking about you doing this in your company base, you know, not every kid is supposed to get a trophy just because they show up to the game. So I
really?
Think the key, no, not. I think the key for why it's so successful and will be moving forward is that you can be very specific about why you're giving them the recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk about it in the book, A Great One, about the fact that it needs to be earned recognition. You just can't give, you know, recognition for recognition's sake. There's got to be a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think, but there's so many people who do so many good things that it's unnoticed. And so when people are actually doing things of high value, you as a leader or even as a parent, you want to let your kid know that, hey, I really appreciate that you did that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the job, you say, hey, listen, our company wouldn't be where it is if you hadn't have gone and come up with this idea and made this happen.
Yeah.
When you do that, you know, it shows people that you're watching and that you care. And I'll tell you what, it really is a way to build a great team and make your culture at work or at home even better.
Mm-hmm. And you've been married for 41 years now, so clearly there's a lot of positive recognition going on both fronts there, because that in and of itself, I mean, deserves recognition. So congratulations on that. We're going to send you an e-card.
They're cool.
Yeah, we're gonna send David a recognition e-card, because that in and of itself is super, super impressive. But when you talk about, you know, the great ways for the leaders to, you know, to take advantage of recognition and to, you know, really create that culture of appreciation, what are some of the things that folks can do, like a few quick things that folks can do? And let's talk about it from the standpoint of maybe companies that are smaller, talking like 10 employees and under, which I think is the majority of the businesses that are, frankly, in the world right now. So what are some of the things that they can do so it doesn't come off as being sort of like just, you know, insincere and just kind of like, hey, I'm doing it because I think I have to do it?
Yeah, well, the most important thing is to make it personal so it isn't seen as insincere. It's got to be genuine. So I think what you do is you come up with a recognition award that you can give away that's very personal and means something to you, and then you personalize it. Like, you know, when I was president of Pizza Hut, I gave away these cheese heads. Now I did it because it was fun. We want our business to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I would write on each one of them. I would personalize. I'd say, thank you for making our pan pizza as good as it is. You know, our customers love
and
our quality,
they are.
And their effort to
wine.
But I would personalize it. You know, you want to make whatever you do personal and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a lot of work that you do is boring as hell. You know, a lot of times you go into workplaces and people just aren't having fun.
Yeah.
So use recognition to have fun. Have celebrations. You know, you can have 10 people in your company, and let's say Mary does something great. Stop the work that day, bring everybody together and say, you know, Mary just handled something with our customer, it was fantastic, and, you know, you might have your own little recognition award that you can give her, but some way that you can literally say,
mm-hmm.
what you did really matters. And even if you say thank you,
yeah.
you know, that works. As you said earlier, I say thank you every chance I get if somebody basically deserves it.
Yep.
And, you know, as a leader, I think if you run a small business, you should see recognition as a privilege. You know, people are—you can make or break people's day by how you treat them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I write in my book, you know, Oh Great One, I write about the importance of valuing other people and listening to them and showing that you care.
Yeah.
And these are little—they're very simple things that you can do, but they work. Yeah. And people are not going to care about you unless you care about them. But I think the two biggest thing I could tell you to do is make your recognition personal so that it's genuine and make it fun.
Yeah.
And know that people can't get enough of it. You know, 83% of people basically say they don't think their supervisors recognize them for what they do at work.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous.
It is. It's a huge number, and unfortunately, the other number that's facing us right now is the clock, where we're running out of time here. I want to give folks an opportunity to connect with you. If folks want more information about you, about the book, where's the best place for them to go?
I'd go to whosyourogo.com.
Whosyourogo.com.
Awesome.
And really, David, just wanted to say thank you for
thank you.
I
mean, we know how valuable your time is, so thank you very much for spending your time here on Reinvention Radio. For Mary Goulet, for Rich Ote, for White Wade, Kelly Poker, I'm Steve Ulscher. Really interesting show, guys. Really interesting. Yeah. See, there's still faith in humanity. People are up to doing awesome things. All right, more Reinvention Radio next time.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Ulscher, visit reinventionradio.com.